Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Everybody, to today's show, this is Mark Kohler, here with you live, yours truly, here on the Mark Kohler Show. Glad you're here with me, excited for another round of saving taxes, building wealth, protecting it. This is where we're at, right here. Woo! Hope you're having an awesome 2013. That's a patented little phrase of mine. Woo! That, you know, when you do a workshop with me, you know, there's a lot of that and butt-slapping fun. It's an exciting topic, and I'm grateful that many of you are finding time to listen either live or on your podcast through iTunes or Blog Talk, sitting at your computer, returning some emails. Thank you so much for listening. I promise to deliver today, and we've got an incredible guest. This is going to be just an exciting show. Hope that many of you find it useful, helpful, and take you to the next level. We're going to have Grant Cardone here on the show later. He will join us. He was the host on Turnaround King. It had a one season episode. It had one season run on National Geographic show, channel, and it was a fantastic show about turning businesses around. He's very focused on sales and customer relations and closing deals, and he's got 3 to 4 books out. We'll go through his introduction here more fully in a little bit, but he's so full of energy. And if you think I'm full of energy, watch out. You know, this guy is rocking, and it's pretty cool. I've been able to see him present live and was very, very impressed, and he's got a lot of content to share. So we're excited to have him here on the show a little bit later, and we're just going to kind of run with it. I had a few preliminary comments myself, if you'd indulge me. Last week was our open forum show, and there was a few questions that were difficult, and I wasn't able to get to everybody, but I tried to respond at least via email to those folks that sent in an email question and try to give them a brief answer. So no one was disappointed. But if that's what I'm presuming. But if anybody is participating in that show before, I just want to remind you, once a month we're going to be holding the open forum show during this year, and save up your questions and please stay tuned. In February we'll have another open forum show. I've been lining up guests for the next 3 weeks that are very, very impressive. It's exciting, and it's all thanks to you, because when you listen and you spread the news of this podcast and this show after it's recorded, and spread the news for people to listen to this show live, it really, really helps our ratings so that I can get bigger and badder guests, because they're like, whoa, listen to what Kohler's got going on over there. So I want to tell you thanks. Please continue to share the links to the newsletter every week. Share the podcast on your Facebook once it's recorded. And I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now, there was a quick comment that I already had regarding my newsletter that went out this morning, and I was a little self-conscious, so I did want to comment on that. There's a new blog article today on when they ask for a receipt, you say yes. That's the title of the article. If you haven't had a chance to read it yet, I tried to make it somewhat humorous as well as full of info. And I got an email already that said, Mark, hold it. You, when you were presenting here in Dallas or somewhere, you said, hey, when you're keeping receipts, you really didn't emphasize putting notes on the receipt as much when it came to dining or entertainment. You said that may be a little overboard or unnecessary. And so when I give a presentation, it's a little more fast and furious. And so I want to just say this. From a practical standpoint, and I think most CPAs would agree, it is very, very rare in an audit situation where an agent is going to say, give me all your dining receipts and I want to see a note on each receipt of who you ate with and da-da-da-da-da. That's very rare. If you have very, very high dining and entertainment expenses, they're going to probably ask for that, you know, so we're going to want to encourage our clients to have a reasonable approach to those line items anyway. But if you're being fairly conservative, no, I don't want to say fairly conservative, but because we want you to be fairly aggressive. But if you're, and I want all of you listening here, you should be writing off your dining and entertainment, especially with those of you that have a very robust business. Every time you're out eating, you should be talking business with the person you're with, and it should be a justifiable dining expense. But in my blog, I wanted to be a little more conservative and technically state that you should write the purpose of the lunch on the receipt, take a picture of it with your phone, scan it in later, whatever. That's the technical rule. I was just highlighting in my workshop that practically speaking, I'm not the best at doing that. I don't think many people are. And I think most agents are not looking for that type of detail. But it's always good that I at least tell you what is expected technically. I think practically speaking, if you're keeping your receipts, you're going to be ahead of a lot of other taxpayers, and it, you know, it depends on how anal you really want to be about this. So just wanted to highlight that. Please continue to check out the blog and the newsletter. There's little articles in there every week that will hopefully impact you in a positive way. Again, continue to share those if you could with your friends and family. All right. Now, every week, as many of you know, we have our little expert review here that comes on the show and helps us out with a topic or a situation that they faced this past week. And I've got a little question here on 1099s I need to bounce off here to our first expert. So let me welcome him. We've got Brian Brown on the line, CPA and manager of our firm, K&E CPAs. He's a huge resource to many, many clients and for us around the office. I think I called him three times yesterday with clients in my office, and I was calling him for technical questions. So we're a team, and it's so nice to have someone like Brian a part of our group. So Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Mark. Was it three times yesterday? I don't even remember. I know it was just I got to talk to you. So that was the great thing.
Yeah, you're so full of it. But anyway, that's good. And
well,
when I call, he's like,
you were talking about your guests being full of energy, and you're full of energy. I just like to know what I'm full of, but that's besides.
Yeah, I'll tell you after show. No, I love it because when I call Brian during the day, it's like, yes, Mark, what? You know, no, it's not that bad.
I did that once. I tried me better the other times. You know,
yeah,
I did
no.
that once.
No, it's cool. You're awesome. I know I'm taking you away from working for our valuable clients. I know clients are saying, Mark, quit bothering Brian. He needs to get his work done. But so, Brian, what do you got for us today? Any a little tip or strategy here that could be helpful to our listeners?
Well, you mentioned 1099s, and that's actually, I know Dustin talked a little bit about 1099s, and I wanted to talk a little bit about them, too. Is that okay with you?
Okay. Yeah, and I had a question from one of our clients at a workshop in Chicago over on Saturday, and I got stumped, and I hope that she's listening to the show today. I promised her that I'd get back to her, and I still haven't gotten an answer. So I'm anxious to see what you say, and then I can text her. Why don't you tell us what your little, you know, Dustin did go into it in depth last week fairly. What did you want to add to that conversation? And I'll throw the question out at you.
Well, rental properties. Again, I think there's some confusion about rental properties, whether 1099s are needed or not. They're not.
Okay. That's where my question resided, too. This is good, because I had a client that she was saying, do I have to 1099 something? Someone is the landlord or someone if I'm the tenant? Go ahead. Go explain this. This is really good. I'm glad we're on the same
page. The only 1099s on rent is rental income. You know, if you're paying rent and you're a business to somebody, yeah, that's a 1099. But if you're a rental owner, you don't have to send out these 1099s to everybody. Those were the old rules that were going to come into place but never did. And
okay.
So, you know, those type of things, we really don't need to. There are 1099s are not required to be filed in that situation.
Yes, and I think
rental properties.
Yeah, and I think where people hear this, if you're listening to the show here, if you go out and Google 1099 as landlord or 1099 as rental property, you're going to see the proposed regs sometimes pop up in a Google search, and you'll see that and go, oh, I need to do this. But then come to find out, at the beginning of 2012, last year, the IRS retracted those and said, no,
that's a little too onerous and heavy duty for our small business owners. So that's why so out there, if you're hearing this rumor, folks, you are justified in because it was proposed by the IRS, but it's not now. So let's be clear. If you're, confirm this for me, Brian, if I say it in such a manner, if I'm a landlord and I collected rent from tenants throughout the year, I do not need to 1099 them as if I was a bank receiving mortgage payments. And moreover, if I'm a tenant, I don't need to 1099 my landlord under the 1099 rules as well for paying rent.
Yeah, that's correct. The only exception to that is if I'm a business.
Okay.
And I pay rent to someone, then at that point I would need to 1099 them. But the landlord doesn't 1099 the tenants. The landlord doesn't need to 1099 anyone else. Only if a business pays rent do they need to 1099 the landlord.
Perfect. Now this is I want to restate that. So everybody, if you're a tenant that's a business owner, so Nancy, if you're listening, because I know you and I were talking about this in Chicago over Saturday, if you're a business owner paying rent to a landlord, then you need to give them a W-9 and confirm if they are a corporation or LLC or individual, and then send them a 1099 for paying rent to them. If it's a business deduction and you're a business tenant, that's when
correct.
It matters. Okay.
Yep.
Now, Brian, we've got another question.
Go ahead.
We got a question for the listener here, too.
Yeah, okay. The other thing I was going to bring up also, though, is there's a 1099-K that's supposed to be floating around. That is for people who've used credit cards. And let's say you've paid your CPA with a credit card. You do not need to 1099 your CPA because that 1099-K is going to come from the credit card company. So if you 1099 your accountant, your CPA, and paid credit card, they're going to get double counted. So if you paid by credit card, you also don't need to send a 1099.
Okay, let me restate this for everybody. It doesn't matter if it's your accountant or attorney. Anybody you pay with your credit card does not need a 1099. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, this is good. Okay, everybody make a note here. This is good. You may even want to share this on your Facebook page today and say, here's what I learned on the Mark Kohler Show. So if I pay with my credit card for any expense, whether they're a corporation, individual, or LLC or not, and it's a business expense, if I pay with a credit card, I don't need to worry about 1099-ing those people.
Correct.
Okay. Now, we've got a question from Joni on the line. She says, Mark, I was told that if you are a corporation, I don't need to 1099 them. If they are a corporation. So if they are a corporation, I don't need to 1099 them. Please confirm.
That's correct.
Okay, now the only way we know that is getting the W-9, though, correct?
That's correct. I mean, getting the W-9 is the safest way because, you know, you can call them up and say you're a corporation. They could say yes, you know, but push come to shove, you find out they aren't a corporation, you could be in trouble. If you've got the form W-9 and they wrote, yeah, I'm a corporation, and they're not, so you don't send them a 1099, they're the ones in trouble, not you.
Okay, good.
So
all right.
The safest way is always get a W-9 from whoever your services come from.
Okay, so let me give you a practical tip, everybody. Okay, take a breath, take a drink of your Diet Coke if you're having your lunch right now or you're working out. Jeff, this is for you. I know you're running on your treadmill. Okay, so just pay attention. So here's the deal. In January, right now, all you business owners out there, make sure you're giving out W-9 forms. You can just attach them to an email. You can mail them in the mail if you want. Get W-9s to all the people in your bookkeeping system that you've paid more than $600. When they come back, that gives you the data you need to issue 1099s to folks. Keep records of who you send W-9s to. Keep copies of all the W-9s you receive. Now, the technical rule is by the end of this month in January, you need to issue your 1099s. But as Dustin said last week on the show, your transmittal of all these 1099s isn't due until the end of February. So you kind of have a little bit of a grace period there. So call us, let us know if you need a little help. We can certainly help with your 1099s. We charge $30 for the first one and $2 for everyone after that, and that takes care of the whole process. Or it's $250 or something, I don't know. But anyway, give Cynthia a call at our office. But, Brian, that's really kind of the reporting side of it. Would you give any tips in the next 45 days what anybody needs to worry about?
Oh, in the next 45 days, just get stuff in. I'm serious. You know, it's just get your information in. Business returns are due, you know, March 15th, which is actually less than 2 months away. Then the individual returns, of course, April 15th. But let's get the corporate returns and the business returns in, the information in, so we can get working on those right away. It's hard when everybody sends all their stuff in at once.
Yeah.
And then we can't get everything done, and people get upset with us, you know. And so, you know, if you're sending your stuff in at the last minute, don't be upset if we have to put you on extension, you know. But get your stuff, get your information in a timely manner, and we shouldn't have any of those problems.
I love it. Well, Brian, thanks for your tips this week. We appreciate it. And you just go ahead and shut the door. We'll bring some food and slide it under the door here in a half hour, and you just keep cranking away.
There you go. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Brian. I know the feeling. All right, see ya.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks, great points from Brian Brown, one of our CPA managers here at the firm, on the 1099 issue. And I think here's another thing, folks, don't stress about extending. Extending isn't a bad thing. I know some of you need to get your tax returns done immediately because you've got FAFSA forms or your kid's going off to college or this or that. That's cool. Let us know. But if we're not even your accountant, whoever you're using, don't worry about extending. It's a good time to take a breath and get your books done and go through things a little more clearly. We'll be in touch. We'll be talking about that more over shows to come. Okay, now we've got, before we get to our guest here, Grant Cardone, we're so excited to have him with us today. We're going to do our other tipster, our regular legal tipster here that comes on about once a month. We've got Lee Chen out of the California office, helping change the lives of folks every day, keeping them out of court. Maybe you're taking some people to court. I don't know. Have you ever seen, Lee, welcome to the show. Are you there?
Yeah, yes, I am, Mark. It's great to be finally back on. It's been a while.
Okay, and Lee, I wanted to ask you, have you ever, like, gotten someone's face and said, see you in court? I mean, that's kind of a powerful thing. Yeah, I mean, have you ever done that? I'd be kind of, it's kind of got to be a thrill. See you in court, and you can back it up.
Well, I don't know how that would do with my reputation around here, but I certainly want to do that with some people that I come across in my daily practice, but I try not to do that too much.
There you go. I think that was a little quote on Jack Reacher over Christmas holiday too. Come on, just say it. See you in court. See you in court. She's like, shut up. Great show. Love Jack Reacher. Better than Bond. I'm just saying it right now. I'm gonna have to throw that out and get a little feedback on Facebook on what you guys think too. But yeah, I thought Jack Reacher was better than Bond. Hey, well, Lee. Well, so what's going on? You got a tip for us this week? Any new stories in your life?
Well, it's the beginning of the year, and a lot of people have, things that they want to get done, resolutions and stuff like that. A lot of people are still, foreclosures are down, but, you know, latest statistics, there's still, you know, more than 10 million homes that are underwater. And so what I wanted to do is talk about some of the things you should be thinking about if you are trying to find someone to help you short sale your house. We've talked about this a lot on the radio show. I talk to clients a lot about this. Do I? Should I? What are my options? But for people who are deciding to short sale, well, how do I find somebody to help me to navigate through this process? One thing I do want to say is that it seems like it's getting much easier. I mean, compared to 2-3 years ago, banks are starting to streamline their process a little bit more. The programs seem to work. But, you know, how do you find someone that can be on your side to go bat for you? And that's kind of some of the issues that I want to recommend you know, when you're looking for somebody, obviously, you know, the one you hear for everyone is, you know, you want to ask them, how many have you completed? How many have you successfully completed? Can you give me some references? You know, that's typical. But
yeah,
more important. Go ahead.
Oh, and if I may interject quickly, Lee, here too, I just wanted to throw this out for many of my listeners. You'd be surprised. This was a phone call I had on Thursday of last week. I had a consultation with a client that called in from somewhere around the country, and she was a single mom. Her husband had passed away, and she was trying to keep the property. And I said, why don't you just get rid of it? You're underwater anyway. Just squat for a while, walk away, get into a better place. And she's like, no, there's so much emotional and family reasons why we want to keep the house. I've got teenagers and young kids still in the house. The last thing I want to do is create more disruption. And so many of you listening to this show may think, oh, this short sale strategy or this sort of topic is for those business real estate investors out there trying to make a buck. You know, this is a reality for many, many people that are trying to stay into a home that's been a part of their family for many, many years. And so as we talked about it, she said, well, Mark, I'm on my fourth or fifth month trying to negotiate a loan mod, and I don't want to do a short sale. And I paid some company, she said, somewhere near $5,000 to help me in the process. They did nothing. They took my money and ran. And she was there was a point on our phone call where there was tears, you know, and it was really sad. And so we have to be careful out there. So I'm glad, Lee, that you're making a few points on this, because whether it's a loan mod or a short sale, there's many of you out there listening that have a family member that's trying to keep a house, not just to make a buck around the corner, but maybe to just keep a house for an important family reason. So anyway, so I just wanted to throw that out too, Lee. What were some of the points or tips that you're giving people when they call you with that same issue?
Yeah, I get those calls all the time as well. And, you know, I think a few questions beforehand might have kind of tipped you off that, hey, you know, maybe you want to stay away. You know, short sales, you know, when you're dealing with realtors, short sales are a whole different animal from your traditional sale. There's so much more negotiating. It's not just, you know, a pretty face on a sign and, you know, staging. You know, there's a lot of telephone calls and, you know, dealing with paperwork and evaluating finances. And you really need to get into those details in your initial intake with whoever you're going to work with. Who's going to negotiate with the lender? Is it going to be this guy? Is this guy licensed? You know, are they going to be evaluating the finances? How often are they going to be calling to check on your file? I mean, you know, with short sales, it really is about persistence. And you need someone who gives you the sense that they are a good negotiator, a good communicator, and they have the structure that they will be persistent when they get to the bank.
Well, Lee, this totally flies in the face of everything I know when I choose a realtor, because I strictly go by the glamour shot. If they don't look good on their business card, I you know, that really determines whether or not I'm going to work with them. And you know, and another thought here: why is that on their business card? They always look 10 years younger with their glamour shot on their business card. But it is kind of interesting. But no, this is a great point, Lee, because the realtor who sometimes is flashy, drives the cool looking car, and they're wonderful in person, you need to make sure they have someone back in the offices just dialing for dollars. They're the ones working with the bank, and that's a great point. And folks, be careful of these short sale negotiators that are not licensed realtors, because so many states have said either you got to be a realtor or a lawyer, and there's no way around it. And most lawyers don't want to stick their nose into this too, because it's so time intensive.
Yeah. So basically, the person has got to be there to answer your questions, and they got to be looking at your finances, your financial situation, telling you what they plan to do and what their protocol is for getting this through. If they're not giving you the details, then they're probably not very experienced, and they're probably not going to do anything for you.
Yeah. Well, and let me make a couple more points here, and I'm anxious to get – and this is, Lee, not to be rude to you, I do want to get to our special guest today, but I want to make a couple more points on this. We've recorded a whole show on this, folks, titled What to Do with a Problem Property. We had a panel. I know Lee was on that show too. It's been it's in our bank of shows from over this past year. Just look for What to Do with a Problem Property. And I just want to make another point or two is that typically you're doing a short sale because you're trying to salvage your credit. And a lot of times folks out there are doing short sales because it's a rental property they're trying to get rid of. And you have to be careful with the rental property short sale because there could be a deficiency judgment. Most deficiency judgments are exempt against your personal or primary residence when you do a short sale in most states, but they're not going to be exempt when you're trying to short sale a rental. So in a short sale, to get a short sale, you have to disclose all of your assets and all of your income and all these financials. Well, what the bank is doing there is they're loading up information to come after you later for a potential deficiency judgment, which is fairly rare, reliably. But you've got to be careful in this strategy play with the short sale, especially if it's a rental property, don't you think?
Well, absolutely, and that's why if you're considering a short sale, you need someone who can financially qualify you. If you have millions of dollars in assets, then and someone's telling you, yeah, short sale your house, I'd want to get a second opinion.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Short sale is kind of like if you're really broke, the bank will work with you. If not, don't maybe open your kimono and show them everything you got. If you're going to try to get a short sale and you don't even have a financial distress situation, because the bank's not going to deal with you. Well, Lee, excellent. Gosh, excellent topic. You just opened up a whole hornet's nest there of issues. One last tip, promise, before we let you go.
Well,
on this topic too. Don't bring up another
ask more questions. Don't take what they say at face value. Ask more questions as to what they're going to do, what are their qualifications. Get more details.
Very good. And, of course, it doesn't hurt to have a little legal counsel behind you during the short sale process to get advice on the deficiency judgment issue, on the forgiveness of debt, taxable income, 1099-C that could occur. Lee, you consult with clients almost every day on this topic. How do people get a hold of you? They'd like an hour of your time just to help coach them through this. And, folks, we're not advertising as a law firm or accounting firm to do short sales for you or loan mods. We don't do that. But what we can be is a sounding board, a little hour here, a little half hour there. We can be a support to you to point you in the right direction, and it'll be a lot more cost effective for you than to go out and pay someone a huge flat fee or pay some law firm or accounting firm. We're going to be there to just a la carte us as you need us, and Lee will be a great resource for that. Lee, how do they get a hold of you?
You can call our main line. It's 888-801-0010. Or you can email me directly. My email is lee@kkoslawyers.com.
Perfect. I love it. Okay. Lee, thanks so much. You have an awesome day, and thanks for finding a few minutes to spare with us here on the show.
My pleasure, Mark. Always glad to help.
All right. Thanks. Well, it is now that time of the hour where if I was a really high-end show, I'd like do a break, have a commercial, and some really cool music. You know, I'm working on it. I've got the music. Yeah, I could play a little Justin Bieber here for you, but what I'll do, I've got a 9-year-old. I know what I'm doing. But let me just jump right to this introduction. I am so excited to have Grant Cardone on the show. Some of you have already seen his bio there through Blog Talk Radio or through my newsletter that went out yesterday. He's an international sales expert, sales trainer, motivational speaker, a New York Times bestselling author. If you want more sales in your business, this is the type of guy you need to be listening to. I was able to see him live and was extremely impressed with his presentation. I'm pretty critical of others presenters because I myself try to be the best I can be on stage, and he wowed me. He was also the star of the reality TV show Turnaround King. That was featured regularly and is featured regularly on Fox News, CNBC, MSNBC, and CNN. He's got more face time in front of the cameras nationally than I've gotten. I'm jealous of him. And he's written 4 books. Maybe when I get 4 books, I've only got 2. Maybe if I get 4 books, I'll be there. But his newest book titled The 10X Rule, The Only Difference Between Success and Failure, is phenomenal. It's got incredible reviews on Amazon. I highly recommend it. So I'm just grateful to have him here and just want to welcome you to the show. Grant, are you there?
Yeah, Mark, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you so much for finding a few minutes to be on the show. I know how busy you are.
Yes, sir. Well, appreciate the nice introduction. You should have just said, hey, the guy's just basically an overall bad dude.
He's kicking butt and taking names. That's what I should have
said. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I just love hearing your voice again. I had the pleasure of having dinner with Grant and then seeing him on stage, and I've had a chance to look through his book, and I've just been so impressed. And now, Grant, a little bit more about you for our listeners. You're down in Florida living the dream. You kind of escaped out of New York. Is it Escape out of L.A., which movie is it? I'm not sure. But you got out of California, and you're down in Florida enjoying the sunshine?
Yeah, I'm down in Miami. I did what Phil Mickelson should have done already because I left L.A. because the taxes just got crazy. It got crazy on my people, got crazy on my company, and we left there about 6 months ago after living in Los Angeles or in California for 22 years. I had built five businesses there, loved California, but it just came prohibitive for me to continue to grow my businesses and just award the state with the fruits of my labor.
Yeah, it is really sad. I just had a conference call yesterday. I even told my wife at dinner last night, I told her, I had the most depressing phone call with a client today. They have a home in San Francisco and one in L.A., and they're making good money. But, you know, they've got expenses. Everybody seems to spend to their income level. So, you know, it's funny. The multimillionaires still seem to try to be making ends meet. But the taxes, when I had to tell them how much they're paying in federal and state and Obamacare, you could have heard a pin drop on the phone. It was just really depressing. But you're out of there. You're loving it. You're in.
Well, we're out of there, and we made a decision. It wasn't a comfortable decision because I'd been there so long. I had friends there, family there, and my businesses were basically founded and were doing extremely well there. So it wasn't an easy decision, but it's something that all of America needs to be considering where – you know, when I leave there and I don't pay taxes in this state where I'm at in Florida, I'm saving 13% on my revenue. It's 13%. I get a pay raise, and it's a huge amount of money. And if you're going to work every day and you're putting your money at risk and you're trying to build a business every day, you're doing it because you want to create some kind of financial freedom in the future. And when you start talking about 10, 11, 12, 13%, it's a tremendous amount of money, and people need to be willing to be, one, nimble, and be, number two, do the difficult things in order to create financial solvency for yourself.
Yeah, no, great comment. And, you know, it's plus you're a lot closer to those good Cuban sandwiches right down there on Miami Beach, which, you know, that right there, that's living the dream. So let me ask you, I want to get into your book. Boy, you have so much material. We're only with you for just a short little while today, and I know many of my listeners are going to look into more of your information. But first, I wanted to talk about the TV show experience you had, and what that was like, and that's of course mesmerizing for a lot of Americans to think, wow, how do you get to the point of having your own TV show, and what a neat show about helping businesses turn around. I wanted to ask you, what did you learn from that experience yourself? I mean, what was maybe some of the things that you didn't expect to learn and you came out of that with?
Well, that's a great question. The number one thing that I learned was that most businesses, and I've been doing turnaround kind of situations, consulting businesses for 25 years, but it really became very clear very quickly when we did the TV show that most companies do not know what their real problem is. It was interesting how many different companies we interviewed for the show and then went into, and management, senior management, did not, they had a whole list of problems, but the truth is most of these companies have one major problem, and they're unable to identify it.
Now, is that major problem, in your opinion, just creating more income, that sales? Are you leaning towards that sales being a key problem, or you're just saying the problems could vary?
Good point. What we found out was that revenue was the single consistent problem with every company we went into, the creation of revenue. However, senior management seemed to blame a lot of other things, politics, the economy, competition, shrinking margins, people, we heard people a lot. Can't get the right people, you know, I can't get people to do things, I can't, they're difficult to manage, we can't hire good people. We heard a lot of that stuff. We heard regulations, but the reality is The one thing we found that would solve all those problems was creating enough revenue for the company. Revenue solves all problems. It is the god of, if the economy was, if economies were a world, you know, revenue is the god of the economy.
Without revenue, it's not happening. Now, did people receive that well? When you try to explain to them, no, all these things are distractions. You need to create more revenue, and if we can focus on that, you'll turn around. I mean, hence the term turnaround.
You know, the moment we confronted that, the moment we confronted that issue, you know, that look, I'm not here to talk government or politics, or I can't change the regulations. I mean, I just look at what I can handle, what I can turn around, and what I can't. I can't solve the people problem in New Jersey or Tennessee or California. So what can I solve? Look, I can create revenue today. And then they're looking at you like, well, dude, you can't do that because I got 70 competitors that will undersell me. And then I pick up a telephone or I start visiting businesses and they see me start generating revenue within 20 minutes of being there, significant revenue within 20 or 30 minutes of being there. Then everybody's like, oh, my gosh. Everybody gets excited because they're like, oh, my gosh, what's the potential here? Now, keep in mind, Mark, we weren't going in and just painting the place or changing the furniture like you see on so many of these turnaround shows, you know, where they go into the salon and they just take out all the bad equipment and put in new equipment. That does not drive revenue. You got to go get revenue. This is the single biggest problem in America today for 28 million small businesses. How do I go get more revenue in a marketplace that's extremely competitive, lots of uncertainty, and people have very little money?
Now, how many of those situations are, and you refer to this and you talk about it a lot in your new book, The 10X Rule, where folks are really stuck in mediocrity and they don't know how to motivate themselves? Is it how much of it is motivation and how much of it is they just don't know how to get it, like a lack of knowledge?
Look. If you've had your brains beat out for 10 rounds, you're not going to be motivated to go to the 11th round. I mean, that's what's happened to the middle class. It is demotivated based on the experiences it's had over the last many years. So when you see a middle class shrinking like we have in the United States, you have people going into apathy right now. You have people literally getting beat into submission and not willing to get back into the ring. So the first thing, I'm not trying to motivate anybody. I'm just trying to show them, watch this, okay? When they see something happen, the first response will probably be, depending on how beat down they are, will probably be, oh, well, you just got lucky. But when they see it a second time, a third time, a fourth time, then they're going to either hate my guts, okay, because I'm real lucky, or they're going to be like, oh, my gosh, maybe we've actually missed, you know, we've missed the mark on what the possibilities are here, and that's where the hope, real hope, comes in. And then we hear people say, can you teach me that? Can you show me how to do that? I just saw you do that with my own customers in my own market, and I saw people do things that I thought they wouldn't do, which is pay them money. And that's what the 10X rule is about. It's about a different level of think. It's about a different level of action. It's about showing people that only one activity level works today, which is massive amounts of push or activity into a sector in order to get anything to happen.
Now, this massive action, is it a technical situation of just do this or do that? But it sounds like more than that. It sounds like a change of mindset where you get up every day and you're just more tenacious. You're just more ravenous about it, and you believe that it's going to actually happen. Is that
no? It's not. It's not a faith based. This isn't a religion, Mark.
No. I didn't mean to get to. No, but I mean, you know, like you're getting up and you're like, you know, I can do it. They just
no.
I don't know.
No,
this
because,
massive
see, that's
action.
Not gonna, yeah, that's not going to last very long. Okay, so one of the things I talk about in the 10X rule is, look, there's four levels of action. One is you don't do anything.
Okay.
Lots of people actually do that. Number two is you retreat. Many, many people are retreating, okay? Maybe they'll never buy a home again is a perfect example of a retreat. Or I invested money in the stock market. I got beat up in the stock market. I'm never, ever going to invest in the stock market, you know? So that's what's called retreat. The guy's backing up. The third level of activity is average. Average is what most people do every day. It's what, you know, millions and millions of workers do every day. They go to work and they do their 8 to 5 or their 9 to 6. They do whatever their post or their job requires of them, but they don't do anything extra. And then there's this massive level. If you study the most successful people in business and finances and in in athletics or sports, you're going to see that these people operate at this fourth level called massive action, where they're creating new problems for themselves, not old problems. Average of the four different actions, average is the most dangerous. It is lethal to people and small businesses because it's acceptable. It's an acceptable level of activity. Everybody agrees that not doing anything and retreating is not good, but average is acceptable. So your buddies, your coworkers, your boss, even your manager might be like, oh, he's all right, leave him alone. This is where companies miss it big time. That's who you want to push into these massive massive amounts of activity levels. So if you think 10 calls is enough, in this economy, multiply everything you want times 10, and then you will know what massive is.
Now, so if it's not just a change of attitude, which is a part of it, but if that's not the primary procedure to get to this next level, what are some of the actions people need to take? Is it getting more done in a day? What are some of the things you teach? I know you do some online workshops, and we want to hear about how to get more of that too. But
yeah.
I mean, what are you teaching people? What are some of those quote unquote actions people need to do tomorrow? Then what do they do? Send out more emails.
Yeah. Well, the first thing, you know, when you and I spoke at Entrepreneur Magazine, my emphasis at that workshop in Denver to the 1,200 entrepreneurs there was, look, obscurity is the number one problem everyone has. Every business, every unemployed person, everybody that wants to get a raise. I mean, depending on what you want in your life, you know, obscurity is your problem. If people don't know you, they're not going to support you. If people don't know you, they're not going to buy from you. If people don't know you, they're not going to go out with you. If people don't know you, they're not going to follow you on Twitter. So, you know, you have so many mechanisms today to break this first problem. People do not have a money problem. They have an obscurity problem. I don't know who you are, so I can't buy your product or service no matter how good it is. So the first thing we're going to do in a company is we're going to be like, let's just break this obscurity, not knowing you problem. The company, the pizza company that nobody knows. They know Domino's, but I don't know, you know, Sammy's Pizza, the best pizza in the town. So I'm saying, look, when you wake up in the morning, you have to get people to know you, to be talking about you, and to keep talking about you if you have any chance at success.
I really love what you just said there, because you took it from a kind of a rah-rah-rah moment of, yeah, you need more massive action. And like you said, that may work for one day or 5 days or 5 months, but then at some point you're going to get sick of waking up every day doing high fives with your team and not accomplish anything. But I like what you said, that one of those first steps is practical steps that make you less obscure, which I know you in the sales training world, there's all sorts of things. What are some of the things you tell people to get to create? I mean, just on, I know there's so many levels to your book here too, but sticking with obscurity for a minute, how do you pull people out of obscurity? I guess it's a combination of all sorts of things.
Yeah, for instance, my wife is a TV actress, okay? And she came back from an audition one day. This was in 2010, I think. And she said, you know, man, she was on a bad audition. I don't know if she did bad or the people in the room, you know, were not acknowledging or whatever the case was. But I said, you know, your business sucks. Your business sucks. I said, because you don't control your business. And she's like, you don't understand. You don't know how hard it is. Los Angeles, Hollywood, actors. I said, look, baby, you know what? I'm going to get a TV show. I'm going to show you that I can control my own situation here. I'm going to go out and get a TV show. Now, I don't know anybody in New York or L.A. I don't have representation, agents, managers. I don't have any of that, right? But I'm convinced that that's what the 10X rule is about. It's about how did I get a TV show when no one knew me? So I basically write in these 17 chapters how I'm breaking through this obscurity and getting known. The first thing I did was I dropped 900 videos onto YouTube. Cost me nothing, Some of them are grainy. There's different levels of quality. But I started producing massive amounts of content on YouTube to tell people who I am. And the goal here was to get not to drive money or have advertisements on YouTube. The goal was to solve my first problem, obscurity. When I did enough of that and I started formulating my message and who I am and branding myself, I get a phone call literally within a year of doing these videos. Hey, we saw a video of yours on YouTube and we're interested in doing a TV show around you. Okay? Well, now you've solved, I don't know how much time you have for this, but now we've solved the obscurity problem. They know me, but now I'm into a completely different arena, which is selling. Because obscurity won't give you money. You still got to sell and close the deal. So these people called from New York and said, hey, we saw you on YouTube. We want to do a TV show around a person like you. And I'm like, well, where are you located in New York? And they said, we're on 62nd Street. And I'm like, I'm going to be on 60th Street on Thursday. This was on Tuesday. I'll be there in 2 days. And they're like, are you kidding? I said, no, I'm going to be there in 2 days. Now I'm moving obscurity to how close can I get to them. People need to get aggressive right now. That's what I did in this phone call, and that's exactly how I got a TV show. I pushed the project forward by being sold that I'm the right person, by doing the activity levels every day, but also knowing what is it that I want. What is the product I want to create? You know, if you're selling pizzas or you're selling cupcakes or you're a beauty salon, what is it you're trying to push forward? Most people are going to work every day and they don't know what they want. I knew I wanted a TV show. So if you want that, if you know what you want, solve the obscurity problem. Once you do, then you have to put all your attention on selling and closing that transaction.
Now, earlier in your career, you've written several books on the sales topic, Sell to Survive, The Closer's Survival Guide. I suppose I'm changing a little bit of the tone here, but this appears to be some people's problem as well. They may be good at getting the word out, but when they have to get in front of someone and actually close, it can be difficult. And Grant, you'd love this story because I know you talk a lot about your kids. Let me just share this real quick. One of my children, if I have to go force them to go talk to someone, they hate it. You know, they're never going to be a closer in their life because they avoid conversations with people. Maybe it's the accountant in me that they that little gene of being an accountant, that it just got exemplified in their life. But then I have this other child who she started her own little clothing business. And just the other night, it was like 2 nights ago, she's like, hey, Dad, will you drive me down to Starbucks? I got to meet someone to sell them some clothes, and they're going to give me some money. And I go, well, who are they? She goes, I don't know. It was a girl on Instagram that likes my clothes that I'm selling, and she wants – and I'm like, you're just going to meet her and just take her money. She's like, yeah, I'm just going to close the deal. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm like, I just wanted to cry. I was so pumped. And but some people are just not closers. How do you
– But
how
you know
you
what?
Teach
Here's
someone
the deal,
to do it?
Okay? Yeah, one of your kids is going to be rich and the other one isn't. I mean, unless the second one's going to marry the money, you know, the one out. Look, the economy we're in today, because Mark, people do not have they're not going to have the opportunities that me and you had. That there was just a middle class sitting there for the last 20 years. That everybody could kind of sit around and flop in like a big swimming pool and have their weekend. Dude, that middle class is getting freaking hammered, beat to death. It's shrinking, and no government, no politics can change that. The middle class is built on a formula that no longer works, and that formula is called average. People cannot maintain. You will not stay in the middle class or a comfortable middle class if you just keep going to work. Or if you just show up and you're like, oh, I'm just going to do – I hear these motivational guys talk all the time about, you know, find out what you love to do and you'll be successful. That is so much garbage. That is such a false premise. I do stuff I don't like to do every day. And people need to understand we're in a new economy now. And you know, it's new. It's a world economy. You have pressure from everywhere. Technology, it's not how big you are anymore. It's how fast you are. Technology's hot one day and gone the next.
You know,
so, I mean,
Grant,
I sit here. Yeah.
Dude, I just want to just echo what you just before you change tones, change topics here again. I thought that was very important what you just said too. There's a family member in our extended family that said something interesting over the holidays. You know, he's kind of been, you know, floating around, really hasn't found himself yet financially. And he said, "Well, I'm looking for that job I just love to go to every day." I'm like, "Well, hey, when you find it, let me know, because you know, taking care, you know, working hard and making a living is not 100% every day complete satisfaction. You've got to just go and realize this is a means to an end of being able to do the things you like. But you've got to take action. You just got to get out there and do it."
Look, you're going to love the job you're at when you get successful at it.
Ooh, say that again. Love that, what you just said.
You're going to love the job you're at when you're finally successful at it. People need to learn how to swallow at the job they're at. You got to learn how to get great at something, otherwise you will never like it. Nobody likes anything they're average at. This is a spiritual condition. And no matter if you're agnostic or atheist, look, you still hate average. So the Catholic, the Protestant, the Jews, the atheist, agnostic, the lost people, whatever, do they all know this? Average is average. It's an epidemic in this country, and it makes people sick. Nobody likes it. Nobody enjoys it. Too many managers allow it. Too many owners encourage it. And everybody in America needs to get it. If you want something on this planet today, you have to give up this addiction and acceptance of average. Get great at what you do, and you will love your job. I don't care what it is. You could be, if you're a great sweeper, you will love sweeping. You'll probably end up building a business around it.
I love it. Now, let me bring up this word just because I know you address it in many of your books and presentations, and I apologize, but I want to get as practical as possible too. It's a trademark of my show here. But fear plays into this. You know, people are afraid to succeed, afraid of money sometimes. They're afraid of talking to people. They're afraid of failure. They're afraid. How do you teach someone to just let that go? I don't.
I tell people, I asked a guy the other day, I said, "You scared?" He's like, "No." I said, "Well, you should be." I said, "Bro, if you're not scared, you're not doing anything new. I'm scared all the time. I don't know what the big deal is. You should be scared. If you're not scared, you're in waters that are way too safe."
I like that. Kind of turn it on its head. Say
why would I want to get rid of fear, man? I actually use fear. If there's somebody I'm scared to meet, then I have to go meet them. The woman I'm married to wouldn't go out with me for 13 months because she wanted to be married to somebody, one of the guys in Aerostar or Aerosmith or whatever, you know? She wouldn't go out with me. I was scared to death to approach her. I was scared for a year, 13 months that I kept contacting her. Every time I called her, I was scared. So be scared, man. The best clients your business will ever have come from fear. It's the guy you're scared to call on. The company with the money, everybody's scared to call on that guy.
Can you tell us your story just briefly of your daughter on the airplane? I thought that was so insightful of teaching. You know, I teach a lot about passing on these concepts to our grandchildren, our children, our family members. How did you mind sharing that story about your daughter?
Sure. Well, we're coming from Venezuela maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and I'm flying in. My daughter's 3 years old. My wife is sitting three or four seats behind me. She's got the one-year-old. I got the three-year-old. My little girl's like, "Papa, I want some cookies." And I'm like, "Baby, you want some cookies? Do I look like the Cookie Monster to you?" "I don't have any cookies, you know?" And she's like, "Well, who's got the cookies?" I said, "Well, flight attendant's probably got some cookies. Why don't you go work him?" So she gets out of her chair. I teach her to talk to strangers and actually give her stars and rewards for it. And so she goes up to the flight attendant and says, "Mister, you got some cookies?" She's 3 years old, Mark. Okay? And he's like, "No, I don't have any cookies." And she says, "Check." Because I taught her this. I'm like, "Look, I don't have anything to give you. You know, you got to go get it from other people." And so she's like, "Check." And the man turns around, he checks, he finds some cookies. She brings me the cookies back. "Papa, can I eat these cookies?" And I'm like, "Baby, if you can get them, you can eat them. But give me one because that's my finder's fee." So she eats the cookies. She's got little green cookies all over because they're from South America. It's a weird little cookie, but they were tasty. And she says, "Pop, I want some more cookies." I'm like, "Baby, I don't have the cookies. You know, go back and hit that man up. He's probably good for some more cookies." She gets up, asks the man, "You got more cookies?" "No, I don't." "Check." And he's like, "I already did. I don't have any more cookies." And she's like, "Who's got the cookies?" And she and he said, "Maybe the two flight attendants in the back of the plane." She walks 32 rows, comes back with four little boxes of cookies, and says, "Papa, can I have these cookies?"
I love it.
And that's the thing that we need to teach our kids to do. You got to talk to strangers. Look, it's not comfortable for me. I'm 55 years old. I've been in sales since I was 20 years old. It has been uncomfortable for me to talk to people for 35 years at least. I speak to audiences today. It's still uncomfortable. So what? What's that got to do with it? You need to do the things you don't want to do. That's where the payoff is.
And that's the massive action. I just love that story of your daughter showing massive action. She's like, "Why sit here and be depressed that I don't have cookies? I'm going to walk 32 rows back, talk to two people I don't know, and ask them for cookies and get the reward. Just do it."
But she's been taught how to do that. She's been rewarded for doing that since she was, you know, literally, like, I've been showing her how to talk to strangers since she was 6 months old. So, and that's what people need to do with their employees, the people in their business. They need to press people to do the things they're uncomfortable with right now. Demand that people do something above average.
Well, could you share just for a moment one of the books that I thought was really just insightful of yours? And I know you have so much content. Just like you, I can see you shooting 900 YouTube videos because you've got so much content, stories, and principles. Can you share something from the Closer Survival Guide? What maybe just a trick or two on closing in our last?
Yeah, that book is basically the premise of the book is built on that selling is not closing. This has been a misnomer made by some of the really great people on stage that I followed but that have mentored me in the past, that they combined this concept of selling, negotiating, and closing into one book, and it should not be. Closing's a transaction. Getting someone to agree to do something, getting somebody to exchange money or some commitment for your product or service is completely different than selling. And I've been in front of probably hundreds of thousands of salespeople, a very, very small percentage, way less than 1% even know this, that selling is not closing. Closing is where you quit selling, you quit building value, you quit talking about your product, you quit making sense of the product, and you now only make sense of the decision. And this is a... It's not a secret, but it is something that is out of sight for most people. Because I know people that know how to sell and communicate and talk to people and build rapport and get on common ground and have no clue how to close a transaction.
You know, I remember, and we just have a minute left, and I want to hear about can get more to you, more of you. But I loved your story of going to the store and trying to buy a drill, and the guy was just continuing to sell you. And you're like, "Let me just pay you. Just get out of my face." And the guy just was like trying to continue to sell. And we can sometimes oversell people. We need just to ask for the money and move on sometimes. And I thought that was so insightful. Well, Grant, how do we get more of you? What are some resources you could tell our listeners that if they were inspired by any of this, where do they go?
Well, you could follow me on Twitter at Grant Cardone. I drop nuggets of data there all day long. You can also go to CardoneSuccess.com, and your listeners can sign up for my weekly newsletter. It'll be free to them. CardoneSuccess.com. You'll get it every week. It's about how to grow your business.
Okay, and folks, if you're a listener of mine, I'll put that on my newsletter next week as this show will be recorded and disseminated to thousands across the country. I'll put a link to millions. There we go. 10X. 10X. I'll put your website out there. Grant, thank you so much for being on the show with us. We really appreciate your time. We know how valuable it is, your family time. Thank you so much.
You got it, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Grant. Folks, get to Grant Cardone's info at cardonesuccess.com. I'll put a link on my website. And just an honor to have him with us today. I was inspired. I'm going to make my kids listen to that show. Thanks, everybody. You have an awesome week. I hope that everybody continues to take massive action. Don't give up. Get out there. Hit it hard. And come up with ideas to come out of the obscurity. Close the deal. And let's get on to doing what we love. Have an awesome weekend coming up. And wish you the best. See you next week on The Mark Kohler Show.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.